Good morning, honorable members. I'm seeing that we are really South Africans. It's a pity that we wanted to be really Mabokoboko. And I was jealous to put mine waiting for tomorrow, because I was thinking if I put mine and the IT department is not giving us the t-shirts, it's not going to be right. We're hoping for the best for our Mabokoboko. I had to speak with the captain last night. So we're hoping for the best for our team. Let me take this opportunity to greet these leaders which we invited in this new parliament, which is sixth parliament. I'm seeing the agenda in front of us that we're having our National Lotteries Commission. I'm greeting you, leadership, in this sixth parliament. We are welcome in this committee. And then South African Football Association, we are also welcome. We're hoping that as we're congratulating the Mabokoboko, since they've been playing, now we're waiting for the real results that will be getting that cup. But also we know that according to SAFA, we know that our Bafana, they are coming all right, let alone about our Abanyana. I'm suspecting this year we're starting it, ended last year with our team of Banyana, and thanking the SAFA to take care of that team. We know that Netball South Africa also it's on track. This is a country of sport. We showed them 2010. It's Friday, it's a working day, but there are those who are going to connect, going home, but really the work of Parliament is from Tuesday to Friday. But because we also want to go to our constituency to interact with our communities, so let me take this opportunity to present the agenda to the honorable members. Once we do have apologies, let me present the agenda, honorable members. Honorable Malomane.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me support the agenda.
Who's seconding the honorable director?
Greetings, honorable Chairperson, the commission present, and honorable members. I move to second the adoption of the agenda. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Now we're on apologies. we've got an apology of Honorable Mhlongo, Honorable Madlingozi, and Honorable Sibisi, in that order. Can I take this opportunity to give the leadership of Lotru to take us through? I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and members of the committee. We are three. We ought to have been four. The chairperson of the sport and the recreation in our commission couldn't make it because his wife is admitted, so he couldn't join us. But nevertheless, ourselves, myself is the chairperson of the board, I'm with the commissioner and the COO. As you are all aware, the NLC has been established through the Act of 1997, and it started operating in 2000. It had made so many strides. The first operator was Utingo, and then the second operator was Gidani. The current one is Ituva. Well, we have been, and I think we are still going to talk to the DTI Portfolio Committee Chairperson. In terms of making business of lottery in South Africa, we are even beaten by the newcomers, Botswana. The license goes for 10 years, 15 years. We are still conducting a license that is under 10 years, 7 years and 8 years, and we are celebrating our 20th in the business. That's why many times, Chairperson, when we come for the new bidding, you find the old one loses because newcomers come with new strategies, and before they could make any money, they are booted out. So that's the kind of legislation we are having in South Africa. I think we are the least in the whole world to conduct a business which someone doesn't make money in 7 years. You make money maybe between the fifth, 6 years, 7 years, 8 years, you are out, and you didn't recoup the money. But however, we have already, we are proud that in this 20 year we have distributed more than 20 billion, and we have paid prizes, not beneficiaries, not grants. We have paid beneficiaries a sum of 39 billion in total. In other words, those who have played lotto and win, the total prize that we have given them is close to 39 billion. We distribute an average of 1.5 to 2 billion per annum, depending on the money that we receive from the lottery operator. Eastern Cape and Limpopo provincial offices were established in 2010. Today, we have established offices all over the country. In other words, each province has its own lottery office where if you want to go and raise an issue or go and drop your application, you can move to that office, not necessarily in Pretoria. And we are proud that in these 20 years, we have opened our system. Any person who's having an application can apply within, you know, from Monday to Friday throughout the whole year, except December, when we discourage beneficiaries that when you come late, remember, we don't increase money that we give beneficiaries. Once we table a budget around a plan, that if that budget is finished, there will be no money to distribute, because we can't use the principle of hand to mouth. The money that they are playing lotto today or this year will be distributed next year. We can't go and say, let's take part and give those who want to come. Now, I won't bother you. You know that we, the shareholder in this case, is the Ministry of Trade and Industry, and the National Lottery is divided into, let me say, committees that are in the National Lottery. Is the charity distributing agency which gets the chunk, 47%, sport and recreation, 28%. You know, Chairperson, that previously we used to come and complain that sports get the least. It was 23 or 24. Yeah, 25%, yeah, something like that. So, but now it has increased to 28%. Art and culture and heritage is 23%. They are also crying now. They were at 27% or 28%, so they are complaining. Miscellaneous has only 2%. In terms of figures, one can round it up to 25 to 30 million per year. So there is nothing that we can do with the money that is under miscellaneous. Before I give the CEO to do the funding model, I must indicate that Chairperson, the needs are more than what we can give. The needs are more than what we can give. It will need the your intelligence as members of parliament to make sure that this issue of lottery must be reopened, so that we debate and make sure that the cake becomes bigger. Because one, we are losing a lot of money through online gambling. Rugby is playing there. Now there are countries that have opened for people to check which rugby will win, and they're getting money. And South Africans are playing online without telling the government here at home. Yet, here at home we say online gambling is not allowed. And people are playing, they are using their phones, they are using their internet to play those games. Averagely, we are told that every year there's close to 5 billion going outside the country. Last year we made a round in Europe just to compare how we are running the lottery here, their legislations, and our legislation. We found that in other countries, like I think in France, there's another one that I forgot. They they are recouping a lot of money, because whether we like it or not, there are people who are die-hard gamblers, like people who drink. You may preach at church, they will still go and drink. So the sooner the South African government gets into addressing the issue of online gambling, the sooner the better. Otherwise, money is getting out. And there are other, which I think, Chair, you will help us with other chairs. For example, there are those lotteries that, according to our Act, they are illegal. But because gambling is rest with provinces, each province control the type of licenses. In Mpumalanga, there is Lotto Star. We tried to challenge it because it's eating a lot of money from the national lottery. And if you check how much are they giving to either sport or arts or charity, we don't know. Here in Western Cape, there is brewing type of lottery which is called Lotto Land. It's also going to eat another chunk of the money. And the sooner the government legalizes such type of betting, the better. Otherwise, sport will crumble and crumble without enough money. Let me end up here and give the officials to deal with a funding model.
Thank you, Prof. The next official.
Thank you, Prof. And thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Good morning. I think this is one of the most important slides that we usually like to share with the members, because it gives a snapshot in terms of how the National Lottery Commission is funded and how it distributes the monies. So, if you look at our funding model, we are funded from we depend on a single revenue source as the National Lottery, which is the National Lottery Operator, Ituba, at this point in time, wherein we get a share of ticket sales, as well as a percentage on the price commitments. And all of that constitute almost 78% of our revenue that goes into the National Lottery Distribution Trust Fund. And we also, as part of that model, get some funds, or all of the funds that have expired as part of or all the unclaimed prizes. So if people win and they don't claim their prizes and they expire after 365 days, all that money is also available for distribution to good causes. And from these two sources, that money funds the operations of the National Lotteries Commission, which accounts to almost 30% of the money that we get in terms of our administration costs. And the rest of the money, it then gets distributed according to what the chairperson has alluded to in terms of the various sectors that we are funding in terms of the legislation, your arts and culture, heritage and environmental sectors, charity sector, which accounts for the biggest chunk of the distribution. And then, of course, sports sector, which accounts for 28% of this. And all of this monies then they go to eligible organizations in the form of NPOs, public benefit trusts, the NPCs, your Section 21 companies, and in the legislation, with the exclusion of all the state-owned organs. There were some exceptions, which included your public schools, universities, and TVETs, and those will continue to fund under the current legislation. And I think one of the good things that came with the revised legislation in 2015 was the categorization of the grants, which enabled some of the smaller organizations which with less capacity to prepare what we'll call a sophisticated proposal to be able to access the funds. And that made a provision for smaller organizations to qualify for an amount of up to 500,000. And organizations which have been in existence for at least 2 years, which we regard as medium in terms of our criteria, to qualify up to 5 million, and there are those that are very large organizations which qualify for anything over 5 million. So we've got different forms that talk to this, and I think the one that has had a major uptake in terms of qualifying organizations is small organizations, and that we've seen it assisting in particular in sports, where you find sports NGOs, sports clubs qualifying under the criteria of small grants to assist them with various requirements. The chairperson indicated that obviously with these changes in legislation came in our new operating model in terms of how we do our funding. And one of the changes was that we open our system, that we don't have a closing date for our calls. We operate throughout the year, with the exception of December, as indicated. And that has really assisted the organization, because with that came in the regulations that talks to the timelines in terms of how the commission must finalize the applications when submitted. And we've got up to 150 days to finalize an application. We've got up to 60 days to pay an approved grant. So all of that assisted the NLC to increase, number one, the number of qualifying organizations. Number two, with our presence in terms of the provincial spread, we've been able to reach the highest number in terms of the NGOs that have benefited, despite the fact that we have a challenge in terms of the revenue, which is not increasing compared with a high number of requests that we get from various sectors that we are funding. With that category of small grants, we've been able to increase the actual number of organizations benefiting from the organization. But also what we do, just to make sure that we don't just fund everything and everything, and we're able to evaluate the impact of our funding. Every year during our strategic planning, we come up with what we call the funding focus areas in every sector, which are informed by various strategic discussions in the sector, as well as the funding priorities that are aligned to those that are government aligned, as well as the NDP and the various plans that the government has put in place. So all these inform what we call strategic funding areas that we are publishing every day in January to say, for the next financial year, this is what we're focusing on as part of our focus areas. That assists us, number one, in terms of dealing with the large number of applications that we get that focuses on everything and everything. But secondly, it assists the NLC in terms of making sure that at the end of the year, we're able to take stock of the funding impact that we've achieved during the year. Now, this is the grant funding process in a nutshell in terms of how we are funding. It starts with the publishing of the priority areas. We receive applications. We do have independent committees, distributing agencies, that sits and adjudicate on all the applications that we've received. And once an approval is made, we have a grant agreement with the applicant or the grantee in terms of what is it that they're going to deliver, and that assists us in terms of the issues of monitoring and evaluation, as well as reporting when we look at come the end of the project. And that is the process in a nutshell. And I think the areas which we've strengthened in the recent years is the issue of monitoring and evaluation, where we've taken presence in all the provinces. Historically, it used to be a centralized function. We've taken it to the provinces to make sure that we assist on issues of capacity building, we assist on issues of education and awareness at the local level, where the struggling beneficiaries in terms of reporting requirements, but also in terms of capacity on other issues, on financial management and so forth. We've got presence in the provinces to assist our beneficiaries to be able to deliver on the projects. This is just the audited figures in terms of the previous financial year. In terms of sports, we've distributed in total 329 million in the sports sector. And that's the provincial spread on how the money has been outlaid. And you will see that there are certain struggling provinces in terms of the number of qualifying organizations. Your Free State, which came at 4.9, which was also assisted by the issues of proactive funding. I must indicate that currently, it is evident that your Free State, your Northwest, were struggling in terms of reaching the numbers, in particular within the sports, because most of the sports clubs, they are not formalized. They don't have your NPOs, they don't have organizations that they can apply with. They are just been run from the boot of the car, but we continue with our education and awareness in those particular provinces to make sure that the people who are running these sports clubs and they are aware in terms of what the requirements are, and we are able to fund them. So you will see that the province that benefit the most is Gauteng, because that's where you find a lot of established organizations in terms of having registered entities that can qualify for funding at the NLC. These are the 2019-2020 year-to-date allocations. And you'll see, as I've indicated, Northwest was still at 0.1%. Despite the amount of money that the NLC spends on education and awareness, the public campaigns that we do with radio stations in those particular provinces to get the sports NGOs as well as sports clubs to come and apply, the collaborations that we have with the provincial Department of Sports and Arts and Culture in terms of making sure that all the people understand the requirements of funding. We're still having challenges in those two provinces. And those are still continuing. If you look at our funding, sports is one of the sectors that still has a budget in the current financial year because of these challenges that we are seeing. I think other provinces were able to move quickly in terms of formalizing their structures on the ground in terms of getting those sports clubs to register as NGOs. So far, we have distributed 106 million. We're still going. We're hoping to reach that 329 million that we've reached last year. And this is what we have distributed. We just thought that we must just give you a snippet of how we've supported some of the federations so far. We have given 21 million to those listed federations: your tennis, South Africa Volleyball, SA Judo, SASCO Cricket South Africa, South African Deaf Sports Association, and South African Disabled Golf Association. We still are looking at other federations just to assist in terms of the grants this year, because this is one of the focus areas that we're looking at. And in terms of the sports NGO, sports clubs, 84 million then goes into that total 106 that we have expended in the current financial year. And just to run through the strategic focus areas just for the members to see what we are focusing on in this current financial year. On the national federations, we're looking at we're only focusing on the preparation for domestic and international competitive participation and capacity building, which is based on performance and transformation. And we are also looking at the provincial, regional, and district federations, which is looking at coordination, host of tournaments, leagues, and other competitions. And this, we're looking most with the outcome of increasing participation from rural clubs. We're also focusing on the issues of women, and this is one of the commitments that we've made to SAFA as well, to say with the establishment of the Women's Soccer League, the NLC has put its commitment forward to say that we will be supporting the women football, and we're just waiting for all the necessary processes to be followed with SAFA so that we're able to assist. We are also looking at the provincial academies with the outcome of ensuring that the skills development of local at the local level on of coaches as well as administrators. The other focus that we have looked at in particular in the rural was the sports clubs, with the focus of ensuring that they have equipment, apparels, as well as upgrading the infrastructure where they are playing. And this has given us a lot of mileage, because as you travel the country, you will see that most of the clubs are wearing NLC branded t-shirts. It is those qualifying. We are still worried about those provinces that are not coming to the fore to take on this opportunity. And then we look at the sports NGOs that are looking at training of officials, coaches, as well as the purchasing of apparels. And this is also one of the areas that assisted us in terms of our mileage in the rural villages. And Chair, lastly, it's just the last slide on this one. It looks at the community recreation councils that looks at the indigenous sports. And this is one of the areas that in provinces like Limpopo Northwest, we've seen a lot of uptake on the indigenous sports for community recreational activities. Of course, the outcome of this one is just to ensure that there's increased participation of the registered clubs. And we look at the macro body, which is SASCOC, which as the NLC we've always been supporting over the years and will continue to support. That's the last slide, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. That's the end of your presentation. Honorable members, I'm putting to yourself that you must interrogate the input and suggestions welcomed. Honorable Mamabulo, Honorable Faber, Honorable Van Dijk, Honorable Malomani, Dr. Mkavani, Honorable Siabi, in that order.
Oh, thanks.
Maybe this is the first time that this leaders or visitors are here with us. If we can firstly introduce us, I'm Beauty Dlulane, the chairperson of the committee, Arts, Sports and Culture. And I'll go like this.
Good morning. My name is Nok Siavi, member of this committee.
Morning, everyone. My name is Nobutle Ngaban, a member of this committee. Thank you.
Morning, everyone. My name is Promise Voisile Maluman, a member of this committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Rachel Adams, member of the committee.
Morning. My name is Boima Mavolo, member of this committee. A former under 12 and under 14 player of Real Stars before I left for my CFC.
Good morning, my name is Willem Faber, a member of this committee.
Morning, my name is Veronica van Dijk and I'm also a member of this committee.
Good morning, my name is Solomon Tombeni. I'm a researcher for the Portfolio Committee of Sports, Arts and Culture. Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Samkelo Mahlobo. I'm the content advisor for the Portfolio Committee on Sports, Arts and Culture. Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Zoleka Gula, the committee secretary of the committee.
Good morning, my name is Alfred Neptanda. I'm the chairperson of the National Lotteries Commission.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Philemon Lektuala. I am the Chief Operations Officer at the National Lotteries Commission.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Thabang Mampane. I'm the Commissioner of the National Lotteries Commission.
Good morning. My name is Kay Mukwena. I'm the Vice President of the South African Football Association.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Danny Jordan. I'm the President of South African Football Association.
Good morning, Chair and members. I'm Ria Ludwaba, the Vice President of South African Football Association and the owner of Ria Stars Football Club.
Good morning, Chair and members. I am Jolis Sipam, an NEC member of SAFA.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Gerald Don, member of the SAFA NEC and the host of this parliament. Thank you.
There are some important people who are here, who are all important. Please introduce yourself. Anyone who didn't say anything.
My name's Abra, I'm a journalist with the SABC.
Good morning, my name is Antonia Austin, I'm from the Parliament and Monetary Group.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, members. Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Christopher, and I'm from the organization Undoing Tax Abuse. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Nzimen Novas. I'm from Department of Sport and Recreation.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Ntombizo Didimapapu. I'm a researcher for the ANC. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so thank you very much, Chairperson. Prof, I want to check something here. According to your new guidelines, the new funding model, you will be funding up until 5 million. Especially for the national federations. I don't know whether it's because of their sizes or what, how we're going to fund them. The second question is with regard to SASCOC. SASCOC used to be what you call the biggest beneficiary. And now I'm told that you'll be cutting their, what you call, you'll be cutting down their
the funding ahead of the 2020 Tokyo Olympics.
Sorry, Honorable Mamabul. Honorable members, please handle your babies. They are crying.
Oh, yes.
They are crying. The babies must be at the back, or they must be handled correctly at the back. You know, Mdania Belewamos. So now we are just putting these kids in front of the desk, and now they are crying. Please.
Yes, Prof. I'm told that you'll be cutting down funding for SASCOC from whatever you are giving them up to 5 million as well ahead of the 2020 Olympic Games. I'm trying to check. I mean, with that large number of athletes that they have, is there not going to be enough metric group for the Olympics? Thanks, Chairperson.
The next honorable member is Honorable Fab.
Good morning to all, and thanks, Chair, for this privilege to be here so early on a Friday morning. Mr. Jordan, I helped him here with the lift to feel homey in the Marks building. Chairperson, yes, I'm starting off firstly. Let me start off with number one. How many funding applications is still outstanding? I would like to know. I know that was a huge query at some stage. I was on trade and industry in my previous life when I was in the NCOP. So we did work with the national lotteries as well. Then, Chair, there's a few unpleasantnesses. And this is specifically on, I would like to know, is there investigation on at this moment with a chief operating officer with involvement in millions of rands when we're talking with what we called undeclared conflict of interest and companies linked to him as well by family, etc. I would like to know if there's investigation. If not, why not? As millions of rands, this have been in the news for quite a while. There's many projects that's been given out with lottery funding that have not been finished. After 2 years in the Northern Cape in Kuruman, I can tell you, for instance, there was an old age home, a drug rehabilitation center, and a library and museum. After 2 years, there was not one book in that library. The museum had, I think, one thing standing in this museum, and it was always a delay of certain things that why it was not happening after 2 years. There was apparently also connections between the COO and this building company family-wise, etc. So I need to understand these type of things. This is actually also public funding. Then I've got a problem. The tender, there's no transparency with the money. As soon as the money, we call it proactive funding. And there's no scrutiny on these projects when money goes out and being awarded by NLC, National Lottery Council officials. A lot of these companies are not even, they are not, according to law, 100% ready for their taxes, etc. So I don't want to say they're not companies. Maybe some of them are shelf companies. I've heard so much about these shelf companies. But are they in good standing with that, with SARS? These type of things. Is it accredited providers? There are no terms and conditions on this. Now, I can't see that with other government departments. We have all these structures in place, but with national lottery money, it's just a free flow of money, of officials just giving money away for certain projects. I need to understand how we can look at this and see to it that money actually go out to the right projects, that people who are registered and are correctly certified do these jobs, and that it is not friends or families, etc., getting contracts and money slipping under the table. Then, Chairperson, my last input and question I would like to ask the Lottery Board is, They helped SASCOC previously with the Olympic Games. I understand that it's a bit of a tough one. I know our country's got difficult economic conditions, but our Minister Nadine Tetwa of the Sports Committee spoke to us about a month ago, and it was said by him that unfortunately in the 2020 Olympic Games there will not be enough funding for all our qualifying athletes to go to Japan and take part. Now, to me, that is actually unacceptable. As our athletes, if you qualify to go to the Olympic Games, you should be there for your country. We can't say because you might get a sixth or seventh position, you're not good enough because you qualified to go there to represent your country. This is why we do this. Now, I would like to know, from the lottery board, will you be able to help the minister and SASCOC to see to it that our athletes actually can go over? We've still got a year to go to get funding so that our Olympic athletes can actually go there and not sit in the situation where our swimming team was at some stage, where Princess of Monaco had to actually help them to go to Olympics. I would like to know if our National Lottery Board, instead of wasting a lot of money, which there's a lot of proof of, and I don't want to even bring it on here, I can if you want me to. It's been all over the news. I've been, as I say, on that committee for 5 years previously. I would like to know, is there any way that they can maybe help the Department of Sport then with the Olympic team going over next year? Thanks, Chair. I'll stand there.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Van Dijk.
Thank you, Chairperson, and also for the presentation. I also have concerns around the lottery allocation for our sports athletes, and I also want to join in with my colleague and ask whether the consultation between the lottery, National Lottery Commission and SASCOC with regard to the funding, what the outcome is there, and if any resolutions have been reached, and also if the new NLC policy on funding model, if it's not going to have a negative effect in team preparations for the Olympic Games. On slide 9, I also want to know whether I want to know how the NLC determine how federations in provinces are funded, and why there are such a big discrepancy between allocations between provinces, and why was a quarter of the allocation transferred towards Limpopo province alone. And then according to slide 2, the NLC distributed 2 billion of funds to different courses, of which sport and recreation receives 28% allocation, and 28% of 2 billion amounts to 506 million, yet the audited total amounted to allocated to sport and recreation was 329 million in the 2018-19 financial year. And I wonder if you can clarify with the committee on why the percentage allocated doesn't match the amount allocated. I also want to know if you can explain to me the use of proactive funding. As I understand it, it's the recipients do not apply, but you identify and then give them money. Can we get a list of the beneficiaries? And I think it might be difficult for you to do it now, but if we can possible in writing, it can be sent to the chairperson for this committee. Can we have a list of the beneficiaries for the last 3 years at least? Who got the money, the amount, who signed for it, and also what was done with the money? I think that should not be difficult for you because you must be doing monitoring to see what happens with the money that is being allocated. Then also with regards to investigation that there was in May a statement claimed on an investigation that has been conducted by the board on specific 2 projects. If you can just give us the green light on what the outcome of that was, and also with regards to Letaba and the conflict of interest, has there been any disciplinary action taken by the or instituted against Letaba or any member of the NLC? And if the board failed to do so, can you give us an indication whether the executive authority to Section 36(2) of the PFMA has taken steps to ensure that the NLC comply with the PFMA. That's all for now.
Honourable Fantek, Honourable Dr. Gavin.
No, thank you, Chairperson. One is going to start by welcoming the presentation from the Commission, Chairperson. It is quite clear. However, I have a few questions that I would like to get clarity on, as well as one comment. Chair, the Chairperson did indicate that it's close to 5 billion that we are losing as the country through online gambling, which indeed need to be taken into consideration, because we can't lose such a lot of money through online gambling. We need as well to get maybe a guidance or from the Commission on how best can we actually address this problem, so that when we go out as the committee, maybe to engage the minister in relation to this matter, we'll be having some of the issues that you are saying this should be employed to actually address this challenge that we are facing. Chairperson, one other thing that the chair mentioned is that we are actually, as the commission, failing to meet. There is a challenge between to balance the demand versus the needs. So, Chairperson and the COO also mentioned that they only have a single source of funding. So what I need to get is that what plans do they have in place to explore other possibilities of sources of funding, so that the commission is going to be sustainable? Because if we don't explore other sources, really it would mean that the commission is not going to be sustainable. If they have something or some ideas or a documentation or a turnaround strategy that they have in place, I so wish to know, to get a helicopter view in relation to that. The other issue is around the distribution. What mechanisms do you have in place as well to monitor and evaluate the performance of the beneficiaries for you guys to actually ensure that the fund that you give to the beneficiaries is utilized as per the request or the application that was made? And there is an issue around the open call system that you have, which you indicated that it only operates from January to November. My understanding is that in some of the communities, like mostly in remote areas, people are more involved in sport, maybe in school or in universities, or others are employed. Now, I just want to check, can't you at least maybe in the near future try to have, even if it's part-time employees that are responsible for this, your open call system, who also work over holidays or weekends or during December, so that we'll reach out to all the communities in the country. There's this issue that the CEO spoke about in relation to the independent agencies that are responsible for adjudication. What I want to get with that is that are we using our staff component, like internally or externally? If it's externally, what are the financial implications in relation to this one? as well as the issue of capacitation of the beneficiaries. Are we using our internal staff, or do we outsource? If we outsource, what are the financial implications? Lastly, Chair, the question is around the issue that the Honourable Member here spoke about on the allocation of the 2018-19 financial year, which was 329. I wish to know about the audit opinion in this financial year, because I'm told it was audited. Yeah, let's get a clue. What were the findings, and are there any spikes? And if there were spikes, what are those issues that were raised? The last comment is to say I'm going to be biased because I'm coming from a rural community. I so wish that we intensify our outreach programs in relation to education and awareness, mostly in remote areas, because some of the communities, even the clubs that are established, they don't know how to go about for them to be able to access the opportunities, the funding, the grant that is outside there. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. But I'm mostly covered in the other question, especially the last one that is asked by doctor, because I'm also there from the deep, deep rural area. And other people they don't know how to do the application and whatsoever. So maybe that if you can have maybe programs that you go even down to the deep rural area so that you show them how to do and to register so that they can be under the registered organizations. But I'm also interested in the issue that by cutting the funding to SASCOC, because we know and we're aware, all of us, that here comes 2020, the Olympics to Japan. What is it that the impact that it will bring, and what is, will be the solution? Because if we are cutting the funds and we are aware that SASCOC even now is having a financial crisis. The other thing is that I wanted to know, how do you determine to fund the federations in different provinces? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Sierra.
Thanks, Chair, and good morning once more. Firstly, I'm just concerned, Chair, the document advertised DA more. and this is the ANC government. If you can have more acronyms that are ANC, like those DA acronyms are disturbing. thanks, Chair. A few questions. I just wanted to check. In the presentation of the prof, he complained about online gambling and recommends that Parliament must do something about that. Is there an initiation of legislation? Because we can only deal with it if there's legislation initiated. And if it is, how far is it? So that we're able to assist in that regard. I see in your distribution, in your pie chart, you are allocating 28% to sports and recreation.
Sorry, I couldn't find church located in your music.
And that's why I'm saying don't advertise the aim. They are disrupting this government. you've distributed 28%, which translate, according to your report, to 326 million of 2 billion. My calculation says 28% would be about 560 million. Maybe if we can get clarity on that one. Otherwise, Chair, my other questions are covered. Thanks.
Thank you, Thank you, Honourable Members. I've got just few questions. I'm also looking at that. Let me firstly welcome the presentation and saying that would love that DTI must fast track the legislation really. This is not the first time that we're hearing that this complaint of the online gambling. By this time we're supposed to have a legislation which is in parliament or whatever stage. And I'm also worried about these two provinces, Free State and North West. Are they allowed that they must be given money whilst they are working in their boots? What are the standards of giving people money to do work? I'm worried about that. And also I'm very biased. I'm hearing that whilst I do agree that you are about to assist the women football, as I'm sitting here, I know that the women football, they've been assisted by only SASA. So, but we have now indicating, would love to hear that you must frustrate that. With SAFA, you'll pardon me, I'm suspecting now we're going banyana, are the team that competing with Bafana, and the resources with the banyana are not there. But sport is a sport. Maybe one other day even banyana, they will come down, but we don't wish that. So, and one other thing, I'm suspecting that we are saying that we are doing clinics, capacity in areas, but why there are those sport clubs that are not registered? We must know what are the problems if we are monitoring that. With the one of 3 year financial year, yes, I'm suspecting, I'm supporting Dr. Ngabani saying that I'm suspecting the auditors, they do have that information from each financial year. So I don't think you are going to have a problem, because now we are in the sixth parliament. So the other parliaments, they were having auditors, and the information is there. I thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and members, honourable members, for the questions that they raised, responding to the presentation that we have presented on the board, and thanks very much for very exact questions on the presentation. Any other matters, we will attempt to answer them and give knowledge to members, so that at least we are one. Let me start by the audit. Honourable Doctor, you asked audit. This is rather the fifth year lottery getting clean audit. 100% targets. This is the year that we allowed Auditor General, because of the controversy of what is written in the Act about proactive funding, we compelled them to go and audit each and every proactive funding project, because we can't blow our horn. The fact that there were matters that were raised by those who call or who call themselves journalists, we don't know whether they are journalists or not, and we accept criticism as the National Lotteries Commission. We investigated. In fact, the reason why we are here to lament too much money is reserved for investigating, even if someone just go and not ask the people who are there in the project. We are liable to investigate because we want to prove that there is nothing untoward. So the Auditor General, who audits the funds, and even the funds of this Parliament, gave it a clean audit. I'm a musician, a doctor of music. I can't comment on something which is audit. I know nothing about audit. But if you sing a wrong note, I will tell you, this note is wrong. You need to sing it like Toti la sofa mireto. Because I've studied that. I've got a qualification. And I can be suspended of giving out a wrong impression. So we got the clean audit. Again, we are going to participate amongst the 10 best run entities in the country for an award. We didn't choose ourselves. People commented. However, I'm saying we are not protecting ourselves. The issue of the CEO, the Madam Commissioner, in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, she will respond to. As far as the board cooperated with the minister. We launched the investigations, and the report came. We sent them to the minister, and the minister wrote, there is nothing that he found about the conflict of interest. Unless, if those who are writing about conflict of interest are too myopic. Conflict of interest is a broader term. I also don't know it. I have to rely on the lawyers and the accountants. What is conflict of interest? If they tell me there is a conflict of interest, definitely, as a chairperson, I will act. I will act on the commissioner, and the commissioner will act on her workforce. Number two, Doctor, you indicated what are these DAs, distributing agencies, not political party. What are these DAs? These DAs are independent people who are they are appointed by the minister without the chairperson's consent, without the commissioner's consent, but they come and sit in the NLC. We pay them. We've got budget to pay them. They adjudicate these applications independently. When I was looking at Limpopo, I'm from Limpopo. So if Limpopo is getting a percentage, I would think when my chairperson is coming from Eastern Cape. Even if I go and say, hey, no, reduce Limpopo, increase Eastern Cape or Free State, they won't listen to me. But it also answers what the Honorable Chairperson posed to us. We are doing everything. Proactive funding is meant to bridge that gap. If the province is not performing, we must use only, and in fact, this proactive funding is just 10% of 1.5 billion, to answer you, honorable member. It's just 10% of 1.5 billion or 1.6 billion, which is 100 and you calculate. That is the only money that can be distributed through proactive funding. What is this proactive funding? I know, Chairperson, you lambasted us when the Act was very much rigid. We went to Parliament, she also participated. Proactive funding, there are two. One is, if somebody is dying here in Parliament through heart attack, we can't wait for someone to put an application for the heart transplant. The NLC must be contacted to act swiftly. The example that honorable members made here in Parliament is that, can we stay for 1 month when children cannot cross the river, waiting for the PFMA to take place, applying, tender, blah, blah. So they came up with proactive funding and they divided it in two parts. One, without application.
Mm-hmm.
It is only need-based. If there is a need, the minister can tell us. The board can tell us. The commission can tell us. That is the proactive funding without any research. Number two, there is proactive funding that the minister, the board, or the commission must go to Western Cape and make a research. I will show you an example. When there was drought here in Western Cape, the NLC took, I think it was 6 million, if not 8 million, and came and addressed the water issue in Western Cape. When there was a disaster in Alexander, the NLC took 2 million or 1 to go and address the issue. When there was a disaster in KwaZulu-Natal, the NLC took, I think it was 5, and Eastern Cape, we took money to go and address. And when we do this, we liaise with the municipality. We liaise with the politicians of the place. Here in Western Cape, I phoned the then Premier, Helen Zille. She accepted it in good faith, say this is the best intervention. I came here and addressed the Western Cape cabinet of MECs or ministers to say this is what we're going to do, and we did that. That's what we call proactive funding. With the Northern Cape projects that the member has asked, facts are there, photos are there. It would be a disaster, honorable members. I know, if you know, I'm sure we know Credo Mutwa, Dr. Credo Mutwa. He's no longer okay in the head. We went there with the deputy minister. We found a person who developed an indigenous philosophy dying without his knowledge being preserved. I cried when I saw him. And he's very angry. Say, in his life, nobody came to build the house, to build whatever. We went back and approved money for the structure, a library and a museum. That will house all his products. I am not an Inyanga. As far as I know, we only funded the structure. We didn't fund the shelves. We didn't fund the books. But the government of Northern Cape, the local government there, they are doing all its best. You go there, there are kids who are studying there. As far as I know, I'm not a journalist. As far as I know, there are people who go there. There was one guy who purported to be a miner. When he got into the building, he started fighting. He said, no, this is not how it must be. That, well, we don't know. But I think as time goes on, the truth will be seen when politicians go to do their work. The SASCOC, many members, all of them, in fact, I think you raised, it is an issue. And I think we will come back again, Madam Chair. Definitely, we need an endeavor about sports in South Africa. How can we fund sport? I'm one who started with the lottery. All these people are new. When lottery started, I'm proud of that. When lottery started, honorable members, Steve Chwete wanted to do a sport lottery only. Okay, now we are having a monopoly lottery that is, it is a free for all. But if we are going to do justice to SASCOC, SAFA, PSL, and many bodies, I think we must go back to our roots and discuss. Can't we do something that these mother bodies, these bigger bodies, can't we have them? Can't we place a budget for them to say this amount will be going to SASCOC in order to prepare for Olympics? This one will go to SAFA in order to prepare soccer. Because the reason why I lamented about the act. The act, in fact, if we do it without the act, you're going to arrest us. The act says SAFA, SASCOC, and any other organization, they are treated like any NGO. If we're giving them R1, we'll also give them R1. So I think it's high time that the portfolio committee our offices are open. We are willing to debate with you so that we can go. Remember, we report to the DGI. We must go and convince them. This thing is not working. It's better to give money few people than to break it R1, you achieve nothing. All Olympics from other countries, you find that there is a reasonable amount of money that is put aside in order to prepare such teams. That's why, well, we will expect medals, but if we are giving them R1, I don't think we are going anywhere. So I will request honorable members, if possible, I'm prepared to talk to the Deputy Minister of Sport and the Minister of Sport, we have already phoned each other this matter. This year, it must be put to rest. Otherwise, we will go and plan our areas of focus without them. And I think, Commissioner, because we are going to have the presentations from Department of Sport, Arts and Culture, National, they will have to come and put their priorities, social development and other sister departments, even DTI. I think we must arrest this situation, Honorable Chairperson. Otherwise, we'll come every year, we'll come and tell you stories here. I think we are ready to do that. So, Honorable Mawabulo, the 5 rand is informed by the areas of focus. When we say 5 rand, 500, 5 million, we are referring to all organizations. But through your active participation as honorable, I think this can change drastically. I want us to have progress. The list of beneficiaries, I will leave the other questions to the members here. The list of beneficiaries, I don't know whether Sport and Recreation you receive memorandums. We were served with memorandums, and I think we might be going to court. Organizations are complaining that when we give them money according to the act or the acts in the country, financial matters of someone cannot be disclosed publicly. You can disclose the name, but what you can disclose, you cannot disclose, but matters of financial, we are having big problems. There are organizations that were visited. Some of them are summoned to put, to give money or chocho, because they know you got 5 million. Where is the 5 million? Directors come, you got 10 million. Where is the 10 million? So we are forced by the act. Even our act. Have you seen, Chairperson and members, have you seen the person who won 232 million? No. He's from next to our parliament. Yeah, he's from next to our parliament. He can't be disclosed. Otherwise, that's the end of his life. That implies to beneficiaries. That includes beneficiaries. What we can do, we give you the annual report and the way how the AG wants us to write the annual report. It doesn't even say include the individuals who got money. When I joined the NLC, it was not part of the agenda. Beneficiaries were not disclosed. I think during the march of one political party to our offices in 2000 and something, we said, hey, what we don't know, maybe let's put beneficiaries in the website or put them separately. But the beneficiary came back to us to say, it is wrong. Don't put our names. We belong to DTI. How many people saw the list of those who got 6 billion of black industrial elite program? Do you know where the individuals are? No. Even myself, I don't know. Over to you guys.
Chairperson, just quickly, and I will not repeat what the chairman of the board has said, but I think from our side, we made a bit of a mistake by not coming to this portfolio committee with the information on who the NLC is, what we do, and our funding. 2 days ago, we were addressing preparing for presentation to the portfolio committee of DTI. I think that will be very important, but we will send that information through, Chair. We are a regulator first, and that's the mandate we derive from the National Lotteries Act. The second thing is that it's from the regulatory activities, it's from licensing the lottery operator and the sports pools that we get to derive funds that should be distributed to good causes. I must highlight, Chair, that it's not like it's a huge amount of money. When you talk lottery, people look at us and think that we are responsible for this huge amount of money. The operator has been licensed to run the lottery. And the current operator, okay, as per the license agreement, then gives us 26% to 27% for the sale, from the sale of lottery tickets. It's not a lot of money. That translates into 1.5 to 1.6 billion. I think everybody is aware that the economic conditions in the country haven't been that good. So if a person has 5 friends, they have to make a decision as to whether they want to buy bread or a lottery ticket. So that's it, Chair. We are not getting any allocation from the fiscus. So this 1.5 is running the organization and gets distributed to good causes. I just wanted to highlight that, Chair. But secondly as well, when it comes to the issue of the COO, Chair, you know, there's an important value that I respect so much in the Constitution. It talks about restoration of human dignity. Our COO is a chartered accountant, a registered one. That's number one. But secondly also, this is a man who didn't just start working at the NLC. He's worked for other entities. We went and had hunted him from the SIU. We cannot discuss other issues in Parliament about what one person, and persistently so, gets to publish about the man and is running after him. We will not talk about that here. The matter is in court, and I think for those who read or see his website, he is actually raising funds because he says he's been taken to court. It is because the man is a registered chartered accountant. It's his livelihood. So that's one issue, Chair. The board has investigated. I think when we report to the portfolio committee next week, we'll be giving an idea of the amount of money that went into investigations. And it's not NLC officials who got to investigate. It's independent people who got to investigate. The third thing, Chair, remember the NLC is not responsible for building structures. We come and talk about them here. They are beneficiaries, and their details are there. The investigators went, spoke to beneficiaries, got to check how they worked on their processes to look for whoever was doing work for them. Ours is just to do monitoring and evaluation. And Doctor asked about that. I think Doctor, earlier on, the COO would have indicated that we have a team in the provinces and nationally. We're not monitoring the projects only. We're doing the monitoring of what is our core responsibility in terms of regulatory compliance. We go and check whether the people who play the lottery are protected and you know, when they win, they get their monies. We go and check whether the systems of the lottery operator are in place and are working properly. So that's just on those two issues. And education and awareness in rural areas. The board would have mandated us to take services to the people. That's when we got to decentralize, and I think it was 6-7 years ago. We are, however, cognizant of the fact that there are those deep rural areas, to quote you, where we still need to do work. I think the COO has come up with a plan where we're considering whether a truck, you know, we've gone as well and benchmarked. We realize that other people have mobile offices that go to those deep rural areas to educate people. And bravely so, that's where we've been identifying projects for proactive funding, which we've been in trouble for. And proactive funding members, we allocated books of the projects that have been proactively funded with evidence of the structures. We will also send those books through. We got to distribute them on Monday, you know, not being aware that this was a matter that the committee would be interested in as well. Further to what the chairman has said, when we were in audit, especially last year, this person from Cape Town got to write a lot about those projects. There isn't even a single project that AG didn't visit. And I must say, Chair, we are not receiving to provide information on the beneficiaries that have been funded. I think we have prior requests. We have a problem. Our beneficiaries are also taking us to court for just releasing their information willy-nilly. We are under a lot of attack from extortionists out there. After articles have been published, the very man that's been mentioned has had to run away, otherwise he would have been killed just this past two weeks on two occasions. Our chief legal officer, who was supposed to be with us here today, his house was broken into, children and everybody harassed because people say they want the lottery money. We are under a lot of attack out there. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Chair, if I can just add on some of the questions which have not been addressed here. I think there was a question in relation to whether we have any backlog. And I think it's coming from Honorable Faba there. In terms of the work that the NLC does, I think in 2016, 2017, indeed we had a backlog, which we came to the committee of the DTI last year to clarify that all that backlog has been dealt with. And it is in that respect that we opened a call where we don't have a closed a closing date and opening date. So we are running smoothly. Our process is such that when we determine the focus areas, we make sure that all those applicants are aligned to that financially, so that come the year end, we start afresh with new focus areas, new applications. So we don't have a big issues there. And in terms of the 2 billion, I think we did emphasize that it's an average of 2 billion if you look at the 20-year existence of lottery. But recently, because of the declining revenue, we have been distributing about 1.5 billion, 1.4 billion. And last year, we came at 1.6 billion. And hence the 329 million that members are seeing there. The audit opinion, I think the chair has spoken to that at length, that we did get clean audits for all these 5 years that we have been working on cleaning our finances up. But also, just one matter that the chairperson has raised on the issue of the clubs that are not formalized. Chair, when I said they are operating from the boot, I should have simply said that we are talking to non-formalized organizations, meaning that they don't have a registered organization in the form of an NPO or an NGO. It's just a club funded by Mr. X in a village who is funding from his own pocket. And that is why we have gone to the length of making sure that we capacitate and educate the communities on the issues of registration, because you can only qualify for funding at the NFC when you have got a registered organization. You can't be funded if you don't have a formal structure which is prescribed by the Act. So that is what we are dealing with, Chair. And also, maybe just to add on what the Chairperson has elaborated at length on SASCOC, I think members will have seen that this year what we've given to SASCOC, we've given them 8 million. The NLC is committed to supporting SASCOC on two issues. Number one, their operational excellence expenditure. Secondly, the participation, and that is what we engage with them on a regular basis. So the amount that we've given them of 8 million was for the participation this year, and therefore we are now in discussions with them in line with what the Chair has elaborated on in terms of what are the requirements for the preparation for 2020. So those discussions are ongoing, Chair. Thank you.
With regard to online gambling, the member indicated, asked whether there are talks about changing the Act. We did feasibility studies around Europe. We have sent our findings to the department, and we hope that because the gambling bill is also in Parliament, we hope that the issue of the Lottery Act is receiving a lot of attention from the DTI. But I think having said so, it will be incumbent that when the Act is amended, I think different committees must voice their issues, because once it's out, it ties our heads, we don't move. So I believe that through committee meetings, I think let's raise this issue so that at least we don't want anyone to raise a private member's bill. We want something that that will accommodate all South Africans so that we participate evenly. Thank you.
Thank you, the Chairperson. Honorable members, I'm suspecting I'm not going to take follow-ups. This is Friday. We've agreed that at 11:30, will be releasing those who are connecting. This is a Friday, which we have agreed that is a working day. But before we have agreed, I've put it with the committee that will come at 8:30 to 11:30. Now, I don't want that we must take the time for SAFA. If there are still outstanding questions, we know the procedure of writing to the entity, and this is the first meetings with this entity, which we have got a lot to gain and a lot to put on their gaps. I will be also asking them if they can wait, because there's a request that once
transport or both of you as our visitors. So now, if we can, with immediate effect, if you don't mind, the Honourable...
Yeah, Chairperson, just on a point of order, please. Chairperson...
I didn't see your hand. I'm
I was asking for point of order all the time,
please,
Chairperson. You're ignoring my point of order.
No.
On the follow-up questions
to
the National Lottery, which is quite important.
Listen.
We cannot as MPs sit here and come and hear that we are agreed on just a certain time. If there are certain questions on forensic audits and etc.
But we are out of
that
order.
We're not getting answers on.
You are out of order. I'm not yet coming back to you as members of this committee. I was still on the floor, and I was going to come back to you saying, do you agree what I'm saying? And now you're harassing me, and you spoke without me acknowledging you. I was still on the floor, and after I'm going to finish, I was going to ask to you, honorable members, that are you agreeing that what I'm proposing? I've said, you see, sometimes you don't copy wrong things that your colleagues are used to do when I'm chairing. Now you want to be that expert, because I'm on the floor, and I was, even the proposal that I'm proposing, that they must stay behind, they are not yet responded. And now I didn't even see you because I was talking to themselves, and you're just jumping in. Please, I will respect you, members, if you do respect me when I'm chairing. But if you don't respect me, I won't. I'll do what you're doing, because you are equal members of this committee, and you have gotten a tendency of attacking me always when I'm chairing. In any meeting, even in the plenary, you raise your hand, and if the speaker is still on the floor, will say that I'm still on the floor, and then when he finishes, say, what are you saying, honorable member? But you're just shouting me. You are shouting at me because I didn't recognize you. I didn't even see your hand. It must come to an end to be harassed in this committee. Honourable members, I've put the proposal that because of what I've already said, so I'm coming. I never ended when I was putting any proposal in on the table, not to consult the committee. But Mr. Faber, he wanted to do what he's doing. I don't take that, especially members who are males, that because we've got this problem of being undermined as women, that whilst we are chairing, every two males in this committee are doing this to me, it must come to an end.
Okay.
Honorable Five?
I will chair me before him.
No, he raised his hand before you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, sorry that I'm upsetting you, but Chairperson, you were not asking that they will not, we will discuss follow-up questions. You are saying very clearly that there will be no follow-up questions. It was discussed. Now, Chairperson, there was no discussion that there will not be follow-up questions. We cannot sit here. I am here as a member of Parliament.
Do you propose to do follow-up questions, honourable member?
Chairperson, I propose if there's members that do have follow-up questions, that they actually do get the opportunity to ask them. That is why we are being here, to represent the country, to represent people, to ask the questions. Sometimes it's difficult questions. Sometimes people don't like the questions. But, Chairperson, it's our jobs to scrutinise this and ask this. I've been in trade and industry in the NCOP for the past few 5 years, and I know this is why I'm asking questions.
Just a moment.
Chairperson, all of us were part of the meeting on Tuesday, and we agreed that on Friday we're going to spend only 2 hours. We're going to have 1 hour with the lottery. We're going to have 1 hour with staff, with no follow-up questions. We agreed, Chairperson. I don't know why he's trying to do whatever Mutombo used to do. Chair, we agreed on a Tuesday. 1 hour with Safa, 1 hour with Lotari. Can we move on, please? It's Friday. Thank you very much.
No, thanks, Chairperson. Chair, I just want to concur with your submission to the Honourable Members, Chair, to say if we have some follow-up questions that we'd love to make to the Commission, let's write to the Secretary, then the Secretary is going to forward those follow-up questions, and then through you, Chairperson, we'll be able to get the responses. I thank you.
Honourable, thank you, Chairperson. I would also like to support that if there are any other additional or follow-up questions, they can be written and submitted, and then we'll get the response. Thank you.
Honourable members, with due respect, when we're having our own time during the week, we won't not have follow-up questions. But the majority of these members, you were not happy about the Friday, and we agreed that we'll take these hours which I've mentioned. So I was just not even seeing that there's one who wanted to do follow-ups, and I'm saying, I'm pleading with the follow-ups, they must write a follow-ups because of the time frames, because we agreed about these 2 hours. So if we're doing follow-up and we won't do it justice to the second presentation, with those words, I'm saying, honorable members, can we give Usafa a time to present? I thank you.
But Chair, can they wait for a photo shoot?
they didn't respond. Okay, you want that? We must first start, take photo shoot. Okay. Are you going to wait for Usafa?
Yeah, we request you to wait.
Yeah, of course, we are having some similar issues. We would love that you must stay behind. Chair, you must just change the chair. I thank you. President, to you.
Thank you very much, and good morning, Comrade Chair. Good morning to the members of the committee. We have a delegation from SAFA. We've already introduced ourselves in the beginning. I don't think, unless we introduce ourselves again, because we are constrained by time. Our presentation is in two parts. One is just to give an overview of when we were there last time, what progress have been made, what challenges are there. And then in the last part, we are going to talk about betting, and we have seen the lottery's presentation, and I think that will dovetail with what has gone before us. So very quickly, Chair, I'm going to run through, because I know by 11:30 we must be out here, so we'll try and finish within half an hour, so half an hour for questions. So I'll have to run through. We've given copies of the document. That is just the governance. SAFA, the General Council, is the highest authority, and then the National Executive, and then we have standing committees and the Secretariat or the Administration. There are the administrative structures of football, referees, coaching, national teams, women's football development, futsal or indoor football, beach football, and then the business, the corporate services we have, financials, the legal and compliance matters. We do have a legal and compliance officer. We also have a full-time integrity officer, and we have a very strong code of ethics. these are the policies, the statutes and regulations. That is our Congress, and that, of course, the Congress is the supreme body of SAFA, and they are the decision makers. That is the membership. Currently, we have 3.2 million members. There's the breakdown of the membership. We have 420,000 women, 1,752 men, and 128 is in the professional league. Now, we have talked about money, and of course this is the major challenge. And one of the big challenges, you know, was that we used to have a contract from 2011 to last year for 7 years with the SABC, which realized $110 million a year, and the SABC said they don't have money, they can only give us $10 million. So we had a loss of revenue of $100 million. And that meant that our revenue is about $200 million. And with 3.2 million members, it means we have 6 rand and 50 cents per member. And that member is poor, his parents are unemployed, they don't have. So you can see the difficulty immediately of the challenge that you face in football. And we also want to see the growth in football, because we've seen that those countries who've won the World Cup, they have 10% of total population. It means that we need to have 5 million members, and there we show you the growth looking at women. We want 1 million women footballers, and then particularly school sport, an increase in participation in schools. Those are the leagues and competitions that I think you know, the national, the Premier Soccer League, the National Division, the Futsal League, the ABC Motsepe League, the National Women's League that we've just launched, the Sasso League, and then the regional leagues and junior leagues. Those are the schools leagues. It is sponsored by the K Motsepe Cup for schools competitions. Those are the structures of SAFA. We have a number of regions. In KZN is the province with the highest number of regions, 11. And then we have Mpumalanga with 3, Limpopo with 5, and so on. I will just run quickly through these regions, and you'll see that each of the regions are aligned with the municipal boundaries. Every blade of grass in this country is covered by a structure of football in this country. That is Alberton Zoo, Amatole, Buffalo City, and the president of Buffalo City is here, President Kolle Sibam. There's Sarah Bartman, Chris Haney, Joe Garby, Nelson Mandela Bay, Owa Tambo. That is the coaches in the Northwest. That is the Northwest provinces. And in some of the provinces, we indicate to you the structures and the competition in each of those local football associations. In Rustenburg, for example, they have under 13, 15, 17, 19. And so we list those things, and you can go through that. That is Kenneth Kaunda, Molema, and there you'll see also the teams that you have in those areas, Rusmon Party, and the competition there, Sarah Bartman, and those are Northern Cape, and then Limpopo, again, we are running through, you have it in front of you. This is KZN, and again there you'll see the leagues in KZN, in Mapulu, Mulo, Mandeni, Ndwendwe, Wadukuza. They have those under 13, 15, 17 leagues. They have 21 women teams. That is Ugu, and again, in the leagues in each of those local football associations. That is Umkhanyakude. What is significant in Umkhanyakude is you'll see that they have in the rural areas the highest number of qualified coaches You see, there are 45 women coaches with D license in Umkhanyakude. In Umkhanyakude, you have a woman coach who's coaching in the regional league, and in fact, her team is top in that league in Umkhanyakude. There's the leagues in King Tswatswayo. You'll see that the only local football association was still to launch a women's league is Nkandla. Nkandla has got 28 junior teams. The women's team is still to be launched. We did have a meeting with the leaders from Nkandla and asked them that they must launch a women's league. And so throughout the country you see more and more women teams coming on board. That is South Zululand, Eriqwala, Umgungundlovu, Umzinyati, Utukela, Amajuba. These are all structures of KZN, and I will skip the all the other presentations and go to SAFA Vision 2022 so that we can rush to complete. This Vision 2022 is an 8-year plan. It started in 2014. In football, you organize your structure your plan from one World Cup to the next World Cup. So you'll see Vision 2022 started in 2014. So 2014 to 2018 is phase one of the plan, and 2019 to 2022, which is the Qatar World Cup, is phase two of the plan. So we have just entered phase two of the plan. So two things we want to do. One, how did we fare in phase one? And what are the targets for phase two? These are the issues. From the period 2009 and 13, our national teams did not qualify for any competition except Banyana qualified for the Olympics in 2012 and AFCON. All the other teams did not qualify, including Bafana. So, and that is just in graphics term to see AFCON, we didn't qualify, under 23, under 20, under 17 didn't qualify, and then only Banyana for AFCON and for the Olympics, and the others didn't qualify. So we then said we have to sit down and deal with this issue. Firstly, we said we need more qualified coaches. We had a situation of 200 coaches, 200 players for each coach. We need, if you look at what's happening in World Cup winning countries, they have 20 players per coach, and that coach is highly qualified. We need grassroots programs. We need coordinated junior leagues. We need to strengthen the women's league. And so this plan had to roll out the elements. I'm not going to play this video. That video will show you our building of our National Technical Center at Fun Valley, and perhaps we should invite you to come and see our National Technical Center, and we'll walk you through. We have fields there, accommodation, and we paid from the Legacy Trust about $110 million investment in this academy. And I think perhaps I must play it so that, no, it's not going to play because I said I'm not going to play it. But we'd like you to come and have a look. These are then the Vision 2022 and its different components. Again, I'm just going to rush through. You can see there it's about gender equality, it's about financial stability, it's about commercial viability, sound governance, world-class administration. We must be a major player in world football, positive image, technical performance, and these are the detail on each of those components. And again, it's Friday and it's 11:30 is the target. So I'm sure we'll come back to this. Then, so in summary, Where, what did we achieve in the first phase, 2014 to 2019? In 2014 to 2019, that is as far as getting women in executive positions in South African football. We have 5 women on the national executive. There you can see them. We have women chairing our standing committees. We have women, 2 women who are presidents of our regions. And in each of the regions, we have a vice president who is a woman. So we have 52 vice presidents, 2 presidents, and 5 women on the national executive. So you can see what we, the strides we've made. On the coaching level, we have coaching instructors, and other women who instruct other women to be coaches, 8. We have 3 women who have a pro license, coaching license. We have CAF A license, 29 women. CAF B license, 44 women. The ABC Motsepe League referees, 22 ABC referees assistants, 30 regional league match officials in the SASO League, 100, and match assessors, 40. So you can see we have made tremendous strides in the women's football, that the referees, the assessors, the coaches must all be women. And you know that all of our national women's teams are coached by women. So those are the achievements. So from a point in the period 2009 to 2013, where we did not qualify for anything, in this period, 2014-2019, we virtually qualified for everything. We qualified for the under-17 World Cup for men or boys, the under-20 World Cup in 2017 in Korea and again in Poland this year. The under-17 girls qualified for the World Cup in Uruguay, and Banyana qualified for the first time for the World Cup in France. In the Olympics in Rio 2016, we were the only country on the African continent that had both men and women teams qualified for the Olympics. That is CAF, our qualifications in CAF, and 2 days ago we had our futsal team, indoor football, also qualifying for the AFCON in 2020, next year, in Morocco. That is the performance at COSAFA level. In COSAFA for 2017-18-19, Banyana was a champion in 3 consecutive years. They have now taken the trophy outright. They own the trophy. Bafana was a champion 4 times, and then the under-20 8 times. The under-20 is the current champions of COSAFA. Those are the targets for coaches. I've indicated to you what's happening at the level of the LFAs and the regions. That is the targets for 2019-2022. You know what happened to Banyana. They lost on a penalty shootout in Botswana. I think it was a big shock for all of us. And but we believe they'll qualify for the World Cup in 2023. And also the under-20 women's team, who was in Africa in the All-Africa Games. They won the bronze medal, and the under-17 women team, they also was on track for the World Cup 2021. That is the men's tournaments for FIFA. Bafana, of course, in March next year, start for the World Cup qualifications for Qatar. The under-23 will leave within this week to go and play in Egypt. That under-23 team is a team that they played under-17 World Cup, under-20 World Cup. They're now under-23. And we just hope that we can get every player released by the clubs, because it's probably one of the best under-23 teams we had in a very, very long time. And they are saying they will not just qualify, they will win AFCON, but if we can get all of the players. Under-20 Men's World Cup, of course, we qualified under-17 2017, 2019, and we want to qualify again 2021, and the same with the under 17 men's team. That is the target for CAF. Bafana is just starting playing against Ghana and then Sudan in their group stages. The under 20 will play next year, AFCON qualifiers, and so also the under 17 team. That is the targets for each of our teams, and we say that that under 23 is already qualified, they're going to Egypt, and the futsal qualified, they're going to Morocco. The other teams will, of course, still play qualification. That is at the level of COSAFA. All our teams were semi-finalists and finalists. This year, the under 17 team did not make it to the semi-final because the technical officers decided that because the qualification is next year for the Olympics, for the World Cup under 17, they sent 13 and 14 year old boys to go and play under 17, and you may have seen the results. And we said, we don't know whether it's a smart move that you play 13, 14 year olds against 16, 17, or maybe 18 year old. But they say that team will go back next year, and that's why they took a younger team to give them the experience for next year, which is a qualifying tournament in COSAFA. That is our leagues. As I've indicated, school is a major focus. That is the Women's League and all the other leagues, as we've already indicated to you. And now we want to just, how does SAFA or South Africa compare to the rest of the world? Firstly, in terms of hosting, from the beginning, FIFA was formed in 1904. The first World Cup was in 1930. And from 1930 to now, 16 countries hosted the World Cup. And on the African continent, South Africa is the only country to host the World Cup. You know, we hosted the World Cup in 2010. Then the second question of, now who has won the World Cup? Now, if you look at the World Cup, it was won by only 8 countries since 1930. Only 8 countries won the World Cup. And you can see again there, North America, Canada, United States, Mexico, and the Caribbean, that's 41 countries there, no one won the World Cup. Asia, 47 countries, no one won the World Cup. Africa, 54 countries, no one won the World Cup. In Europe, there's 55 countries. Only 5 countries won the World Cup out of 55 in Europe. In South America, only 3 countries out of 10 won the World Cup. So in total, over 88 years, only 8 countries won the World Cup. And that's why even the president of FIFA says that in the foreseeable future, there's only 10 countries that can possibly win the World Cup. But we look at what are the trends, what are the strengths. Look at the performance of Croatia, and what are the things that we can do so that we can get there to compete for that honor. Then what about the African Cup of Nations? Now, even if CAF was formed in 1957 and South Africa was a member but immediately expelled because of apartheid, we only went back to CAF in 1992. And so we said, let's look at 1992. Who won the African Cup of Nations since 1992? Egypt won it 4 times. Cameroon 4 times. Nigeria twice, Ivory Coast twice, Algeria once, Zambia once, Tunisia once, and South Africa once. So since 1992, only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 countries won out of 54, and we're one of those. Who did not win the World Cup in that period? Ghana didn't win it. Senegal never won the World Cup. Burkina Faso never. Congo DR didn't, Sudan, Morocco, Ethiopia, and Congo in that period never won the World Cup, AFCON. So again, if one just put these things in perspective, you will see that we are not as bad as people make out South African football. That is the ranking of women's football. Of course, we are third on the African continent and 49th out of 211 in the world. That is the men. We are 70 and 13 on the continent. When we came into office in 2013, we were number 86 in the World Cup. And remember, when we hosted the World Cup, we were the lowest ranked team ever to play in the World Cup at number 86. We have moved significantly since then. Then we want to say, now how do we compare with the so-called giants on the continent? How do we compare with Egypt, Nigeria, Senegal? In 2017 World Cup, Nigeria and South Africa qualified. Under 23 men, Nigeria and South Africa. Senior women for the Olympics in Rio, South Africa. Under 17 women in Uruguay, South Africa. Under 20 men now in Poland, Nigeria, South Africa, Senegal. Senior women 2019 World Cup in France, South Africa, Nigeria. AFCON in Egypt now 2019, Senegal, Nigeria, South Africa, Egypt. And if you look at the tournaments that they did not qualify, Egypt and Senegal, you will see South Africa is probably one of the best performers on the African continent. As women football, I'm not going to, you can see the investment in women's football, the impact that we've seen of women players playing overseas. Here are the women, of course. Refilwe Jani is playing for AC Milan. She played last week against Inter Milan, and she is a big star now in women's football in Europe and in Italy. And these are the other players. Tembi Khatlana and Linda Matlau is playing in China, and others are playing all over the world, including the United States. One of the things that we also did was to invest in education, and you can see the number of degrees that these banana players have. You hardly find a banana player without a degree. You have the list there. You can go through and see from the Legacy Trust how we invested and helped these women to become professionals beyond football. And those are the long list. There's Rhoda Malawutsi and Rafilwe Jani also. I have more than one degree. Those are the long list of these players. I don't have a list of Bafana players. Maybe I'll bring it next time to show their academic qualification. My delegation is laughing and they don't think I... as far as investment into development, you can see the number of young players we have playing overseas. In England, there's a list of players. Most of these players are between 18 and 20. In Finland, in France, in Germany, in Ireland, in Latvia, Lesotho, in Lithuania, in the Netherlands, Belgium, in Abu Dhabi, in New Zealand, in Portugal, a long list of players. Mostly, these players, virtually 80% of them come from the academy, Hoy Park Academy in Durban, and many of them are from KZN. Then in Poland, Peru, Scotland. So we have almost 80 of the players playing in many countries, and that's why we are saying currently we have a young generation of players in Bafana. We have a good under 23 team. We have 80 players in Europe. We will produce a team that can compete with the best in the world. I think I must stop there and hand over to Gay McQuenna, who will take you through the betting and football presentation. I just stayed within my 10 minutes.
Thank you, President. Thank you, Chair, and honorable members of the committee. It is always a pleasure to be here. And when you invite us to come down to Cape Town, we feel very, very important. It's an honor to be in this house. Chair, a day before yesterday, the Minister of Finance presented the midterm budget. And you saw what happened with the rand taking a knock and so forth. He outlined the difficulties the country faces in terms of our economic environment. And the chair of the Lottery Commission has just also said that, you know, the needs that they need to meet out there are always much higher than the funding that is available. And we are here today mainly to share with the committee some ideas of sources of funding that we can also tap into. And I think the chair of the NLC did highlight that we need to find other sources of funding. And this is one idea that we have here today. First of all, it's important that we're talking football for today, and I know the chair of the NLC has suggested, which I think is actually a very brilliant idea, that we should have a sports endeavor to discuss sources of funding for sports. Sports is one of our key ingredients in the country, and we cannot hope to build the world when we're going to spend 6 rand odd per player in football. We definitely need to improve. However, as football in the country, we have obviously a mandate from our members, but key to this also is the fact that we are a member of the International Organization of Football, which is FIFA. And how FIFA works is that it allows only one association to be recognized as a member in a country. So we cannot have two or three or something like that associations running football in a country. It's only one. And everything else, clubs, leagues, associations, and so forth, they all fall under this umbrella body, which is the body that is talking to you right now, the South African Football Association. And I know that because the public out there, for example, are seeing activities of the professional league every day, sometimes they have the impression, oh, this is now the only association. And because we are the federal structure on the top, we are not always visible every day, and people do not know the role of the association. So we, if there's anything to do about football in terms of rules and regulations and so forth, we are the body that is responsible for that. Now, FIFA, as an international body, comprised of all the members of football worldwide, has got the rights for all competitions around football, from laws involving football, from competitions, from content. Whatever has to do with football is controlled by FIFA and its members. And the South African Football Association is one of those members. Now, how the council, this is now the umbrella body of controlling FIFA, the council could decide that we are managing the rights ourselves, or we're managing the rights with a third party, or we outsource the rights to another third party. The point I'm trying to make here, Chair, is that we are the body that could make input, that could get involved in regulating betting, which is what we're going to be talking about in a minute. We have done a quick survey about what is happening in the wagering industry. We believe that there is a potential for us to tap additional income, as the lotto has explained earlier on, that it is trying its best to contribute to sport, but it is not enough. But we're saying today, here is another potential source to you as legislators that we should look at. We've done a quick survey and realized that over the last 6 years, the South African sports betting industry has grown tremendously by approximately 450% to 40 billion. You know, the traditional betting has been racehorse and casinos and so forth. But sport is becoming a very, very big sector in this regard as well. And it is estimated that in South Africa, the wagering operators, the people operating the sports betting houses, keep to themselves approximately 3.5 billion rand. And the sad story is that all the sporting codes that are used for this betting get zero out of this. And the vast proportion of this sports betting, Madam Chair, is conducted on football. We estimate that this is 60 to 90%. It's largely international football events that are bet on Manchester United, etc., etc. But from time to time, you'll find a fan of a fan getting involved. I think, Madam Chair, members will remember the famous case of the Senegal versus South Africa game that we had to replay because of the betting industry. We all knew nothing about this. It's happening somewhere in South Korea, and the Far East out there. The betting about a game that's happening here in South Africa and making huge sums of money, and that's what we are not aware of. And this is the point I think the chair of the NLC was talking about, the online gaming that we need to control as well in South Africa. Now, currently, the wagering operators, as I said earlier on, do not contribute anything to sports, and we think this is a situation that needs to change. Then. This is just quickly the sources of the information of the stats that we're giving to you, where we got them from, National Gaming Statistics, and so forth. But you have that information at your disposal. We looked at the case study of a best practice model. And in Australia, we found that they have actually a very interesting model that perhaps as South Africans we can look at and consider. And Chair, we want to propose today to the committee that perhaps it might be a good idea to have the gaming board as regulators, the National Lotteries Commission, ourselves and yourself, maybe take a visit down to Australia to go and have a look. And I'm sure maybe the commission might already be quite involved in this. But what is happening there is that the various states in Australia have legislation that they control betting. So wagering operators need to be approved by the controlling body for each racing in that particular state. I think they have about 5 states or so. Which means in our case, for example, the gaming board, which is now the regulator of this industry, could issue a license to an operator, but that operator is not going to operate a betting office or agent before that sport, be it cricket, be it rugby, be it football, can also authorize it. In other words, have some agreement of some sort on how we're going to influence or how we're going to benefit out of the whole exercise. They have legislation focusing on sports integrity, which is another very important point. I think our system in the country is very geared to deal with people who are dealing crooked ways of betting and so forth. But more often, the people involved in the sport are not looked after. There's no checks and balances for the players, for the referees, because as a controlling body, we just do not have the muscle and the resources to do that. So if we look at this dispensation, we could learn a lot from also making sure that, as the President said earlier on, we have an integrity commission that is within the association that could then have a muscle to check and make sure that we monitor all the betting activities. Players are not influenced, are not bought to influence games and match fixing and so forth. Just taking the example further, they have in place an integrity and product fee agreement. As I said, the sports controlling body, in this case talking football, this would be SAFA, would then have to enter into an agreement with the betting house, if you like. And all the events that they will be using then would be controlled, but also the controlling body would have some income out of those activities. Fortunately, in their case, this integrity agreement is like a binding contract. So, in other words, we enter into an agreement where you are actually forced to abide by that agreement. You cannot just do as you like, perhaps see it as a CSI project, or it is a concrete agreement that is stipulated that you would have to contribute if it's 10 or 20 or 30%, whatever the case may be, you would have to obey and go by that. And then, just to share with you, Chair, again, the seriousness or the integrity of this agreement. In our country, we're probably operating, and if you look at this block here, at the copyright action. I know the PSL has, I think, challenged the commission in terms of the copyright to say you cannot use our games without our authority, etc. But the copyright is a much lighter version, as you would see there, of trying to enforce this revenue generation source. The sports integrity agreement is a much more effective way of doing it, and they've proved it in Australia. And they, according to their experience, it is a very good deterrent as well for criminal activities around the betting. You can then be able to enforce it more legally. Furthermore, just we took two scenarios, and this is what the chair was talking about. Here, there are events that sometimes take place in a country, like in Australia or in South Africa, and there are events that take place outside of South Africa. And then there are South Africans betting, then there are non-South Africans betting. And I think this is what the chair of the NLC was highlighting earlier on, that, for example, the people betting outside, typically the Senegal-South Africa game, are very difficult to control if we do not have the legislation in place. And we support then the submission by the NLC that the DTI needs to really look at influencing the online gaming. We need to have legislation in place, Madam Chair. I've said this several times, Madam Chair. I think we cannot overemphasize the point that here is a potential opportunity for a source of income in addition to the great work done by the NLC. This is a potential source of income that could support sport. And as football, we're seeing there are a lot of operators out there benefiting from our activities without us getting anything out of them. So the experience in Australia has also shown that it could improve even the integrity of our game. We can improve the product of the offer that we give to the public out there. We need to have those resources to be able to do all these beautiful things. The chair has also made the point that, you know, whether we like it or not, people are betting. We can stick our heads in the sand and say, well, we don't care. But people are going to be making huge sums of money out of our products where we are actually not involved. We need to be taking proactive action to ensure that we control this industry. I think, Madam Chair, as I conclude, I would like to highlight the point that there are a number of areas that we as football work with government quite effectively. For example, in terms of the next big item that we are discussing with the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture is the 2023 bid for the Women's World Cup. We are excited about this. We think it's an opportunity for us. We have the infrastructure, we have the environment. We could be promoting tourism industry. We probably need one big exciting thing again to keep South Africans going. We have done very well in terms of hosting the COSAFA Cup. We know some of the games took place in Devon, some of the games took place in PE, and here the local government, particularly the municipalities in those areas, have supported us. Our president has just spoken about school sports and the role that we work with the Department of Basic Education and the Department of Sport to stage this event. And as we all know, I think we all should wish the Springboks good luck tomorrow. The whole nation, I can see our honorable members are geared and excited about it. Oh yes, we should all, you know, this is a social cohesion. This is building patriotism amongst all of us. So we cannot just ignore it and hope it's just going to happen on its own. We need to put a concerted effort to make sure that we put the necessary resources, we put the necessary capacity and the technical skills to make sure that we are more excited more often than we are at the moment. I think that's the end of our presentation, Madam Chair, and we can take some questions. I'll hand back to you, President.
Thank you very much. I just want to make a few concluding remarks, Chair. First of all, we've heard from the lottery. One of the problems in South African sport in general is the difficulty of money, resources. As you know, we had two teams qualifying for the All Africa Games in Morocco. And SASCOC took a decision that our teams cannot go because they don't have money. And they said only 100 athletes can go. Two football teams is already 70, so you can't go. And these two teams that played in the African Cup of Nations, they qualified for the tournament and then were told, no, but there's no money, they can't go. In that case, even in our poverty, we had to find the money to send our teams because these are 18, 19-year-old players, and we had to pay. So we have to then say, let us jointly look at how can we solve this problem. And this is one area. Bafana played Mali. There was a lot of betting on the match. They didn't ask us. We don't know how much money they made. And that goes for so many other matches. And therefore, we have to look at what are the alternative sources of revenue for sport, not just for football, for sport in general. So we're suggesting that we look at this issue, and therefore we would propose, one, that the committee seriously considers constituting a delegation, that delegation we can arrange if we go to FIFA, because it's not just Australia, it is France, it is Spain, and if you see how their national teams perform and then ask, but where do you get the funds from? It is from these sources. And we went to African Cup of Nations. We were the only federation with no money from government. All the other governments gave them massive sums of money because they have the resources. Now we understand the competing interests of government priorities, and therefore we said, let us look at alternatives. So we would propose that a delegation should go to Zurich to talk to them what's happening globally in this space, because football is the biggest revenue generator when it comes to sports betting. It's football. Secondly, let's go to France and Spain and maybe England, and then there's Australia as well. The second issue that has been raised, that if you generate more money from betting, you have to look on the other side, what happens with integrity, match fixing, corrupting referees, and so on. So you have to look at that as well as a counterbalance. So when the committee is ready, we can further engage, and we urgently would like the committee to consider that we jointly engage and visit these countries to find a solution, not just for football, but for sport, to see where else we can generate revenue. And this is billions of rands. And we will leave that with the committee. I know you must leave it up at 11, so you'll probably discuss it next time. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. I'm not happy when one Mbogoda is with you, didn't give her anything to say, maybe in the questions. Let me take this opportunity to give it to the honorable members. This day we have been given because the committee is broadened. We used to have a sport, now arts is. But we need to be brief to the point, even if we are asking questions, because we can't call people and then we'll be sent to themselves. They must not finish their presentation. The only problem that we are having, when we ask a question, we are doing preambles. If you just ask question or put the suggestion, we can manage this half past 11, which were agreed upon. Brief to the point, don't make preambles. Honorable Boy, Honorable Sieve, Honorable Van Dijk, in that order, Honorable Malomane, thank you.
Well, thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson. President, we'll consider that. I think as a committee we'll consider that, and we'll come back to you yes, very, very soon. It is very, very important. Now, my first question, Honorable Members, comes from a member of the public, a South African, who said, Honorable Mamabolo, and I quote, please ask Bradeni, Cesaria, David President, and SAFA executives as to who appoints the SAFA referees committees and the review committees, unquote. Obviously, this comes after what happened in the game of Kaizer Chiefs and the game of Orlando Pirates on Tuesday. And from there, there's this photo circulating of Kaizer reviewing the goal of Kaizer Chiefs. So now this member is asking if is that not a, what to call, a conflict of interest. So the question is, who appoints these referees for PSL matches? Because it will cause what to call an apathy in stadiums. People will not go to stadiums because they will say, ah, we know Chiefs will win, Pirates will win, and so on. The other question is the feeding policy. You remember you used to have the coach of Amajita sitting in the bench for the, what do you call, the coach of Amajimbos sitting in the bench for matches of Amajita matches, in the matches of Amadluk in the matches of Fafana Fafana. What happened to that policy of feeding? Because it is where we will be able to raise the players. Lastly, the issue of youth development. What happened to our under 12 Champions League, Cesaria, that we used to play in, because they used to, take us away from the issue of drug abuse, crimes, and so on. So what happened to the under 12 tournaments, under 14 Nike, under 17 Coca-Cola, under 19 Caltech, under 23 Sasol, and so on?
can't we bring those games back? The issue of school sport, is it in the townships or is it only at national level? Last question, when are we going to have VAR in South Africa? And when are we going to have former players of Bafana Bafana coaching Bafana Bafana? We are happy with Mulifen Seke. I'm not saying you must fire him. But when are we going to have the likes of Benny McCarthy and Lucas Vandere as coaches of Bafana Bafana? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable Sian.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Honorable Mama Wulu spoke like a Sundown supporter. I think let me also welcome the presentations. I think it was informative that we have time pressures. Most of my questions, I think, are answered by the program, except to say maybe we'll need a presentation. Of course, we are not happy with the woman representation issue whilst you are making strides. But after so many years, we need to be somewhere. I saw it's only one or two presidents of SAFA in regions or in provinces. So we need to make strides. But what is the progress with regard to allowances or salaries of women players? Maybe men, today you may not give us a lot of details about the Women's Football League. Of course, I see their play, but we just want to have a brief of what is happening there. Of course, Honorable Boy talked about development, because I remember there was an under-23 team that went to the World Cup, and I think they performed up to semi-finals, if I'm not sure. But when I look at the team, Bafana Bafana teams after that, I don't remember seeing a single player from that team. So what's happening with the, why are players just vanishing like that? Then there's a problem with our development there. Program. You made presentation, especially on the betting issue, which needs legislation. The president talked about support of government. I saw a statement, not sure whether it's fake news, a statement by SAFA saying, we're not going to be convened by politicians to an indaba. Not sure whether it's correct. If it's correct, can we be briefed? Because I remember we mandated, as a committee, we mandated the Minister of Sports, Arts and Culture to say we're not happy with the way we're performing. The country is not happy with a number of issues around sports. Can you please convene an indaba and we get ideas as to how can we move forward? But I saw that statement that says we don't want political interference. So if we can be clarified around that, because we want government, who's comprised of politicians, to assist us in whatever we want to do. I don't know whether what Honorable Boyd asked is about this TV referee. Were you referring to it? Okay. Thanks, sir.
Honorable Siaba, Honorable Fendick.
Thank you, and also thank you for the presentation. I just want to mention that we only received it last night, and maybe you can just, whoever, give us clarity on that. My first question is, according to the media, $6 million was spent on re-electing you, Mr. Jordan, and what concerns me is that the five members that was on the Electoral Commission, they were paid $45,000 per day. I would like to know who appointed them, who decided to pay, approve that, and also the excessive salaries for the services which they rendered, which was free in the past when the IEC was used for this service. Especially being cash strapped, and also the fact that you mentioned how the daily or the money that you reflected the allocation for athletes, how do we justify that a person gets 45,000 rand a day? Then I want to know whether SAFA has engaged with the sports betting bodies with regards to funding. If yes, what was the agreement? If not, why not? Another question that I have is, if you just can explain what is the ministerial indaba and why does SAFA not see its way to participate? I personally just want to get clarity on that. And then I also need to know, with regards to the dispute between SASCOC and SAFA, with regarding to the football teams that were participating in the 2019 African Games, if you can just give us clarity on how was that actually declared, the dispute, and how was it resolved, and did the minister intervene? Because my question, why I'm asking this, it's also said that you've got different criteria or procedures for people to qualify for games, Olympic games. So we also have a problem that now that canoeing issue that was in the media, where people qualified on international criteria to participate, but then SASCOC they did not adhere to SASCOC. So that also left those people who trained for 8 years now not being able to go to attend to the Olympics, which is also my question personally. While I don't want the minister to intervene, with the process, if the minister did intervene in this process, does it not leave the door open for political interference in the future? And yes, if you can maybe just give us clarity on that one.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think Honourable Knox, our chief whip, has covered me, because the issue that I wanted us to discuss, it was the issue of the issue of INDAPA. That's what we want, because it's November, and we want to make sure that we go and discuss the issues that they affect in football. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Members. I'm suspecting that it's not only you, staff, who has got this problem. It happened that I was discussed with one of the leaders here from Western Cape of the rugby, that the rugby girls are not allowed to go whilst they're born by SASCOC. But I'm suspecting, because I met with them, we met with them, we're trying that Irabi must try to intervene. Maybe there's it's high time that as a committee we must fast track the question of SASCOC to come to the committee and explain. If in the question of SASCOC SAFA dispute and minister once given a report, but I won't say you must not respond on that. As we're sitting here, the detailed report we were given about that problem, but let me give you the chance to respond to all questions. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. All of us will respond to these questions. There are some questions that directly put to me, which I will deal with. Firstly, the referees. That question went to the review panel, and they view the tapes, and they found that was a legitimate goal. The review panel. So The review panel consists of former referees, and you know, I don't even know Aris Odatos. He's also an advocate, and I don't think he's linked to any club. So that is all controversial issues are referred to the review panel who sit after the match and review. And that's why you find that we have suspended a number of referees where they've clearly made an error, and we've suspended them and removed them from CAF and FIFA responsibility. So that is the allegation that Kaiser Motaung was there watching. No, it can't be true. No. I would like to see those pictures. That must be fake. It can't be. So the question of coaches, I think that's an important issue. Yes, we are still making sure that coaches work together under 17-20. That's why you find that the under-23 and the Bafana players now, Molefe Ntseki started with them in under-17. He went to under-20, he went to under-23, now he's going to the players with Bafana. And then there is David Notwane, who's now with under-23. So they have been working together, and that worked very well for us. So we'll continue that policy. As far as the youth competitions is concerned, I'll give you the report, because what we are doing now, we have a compliance check in each of our regions and LFAs, how many under-13s, how many 15s. That's why I could tell you earlier that in Nkantla they've got 28 junior teams under 15, and I can give you in each of the region how many under 13, 15, 17. We'll send that report to the committee and you can have a look at that. The question that we paid $6 million to get me elected, no, we don't have presidential elections. We have elections for the entire executive. So all of us get elected at the same time. And this was a false and misleading statement, because what did the $6 million cover? We bring 300 people from all over the country to Johannesburg, so it's flight costs. We pay accommodation, we pay meals, we pay accreditation, we pay all hire, and all of these costs, and we can actually give you the breakdown of that cost. It's just misleading. Now, we also have, besides our statutes, we have an electoral code, and that electoral code says, and we changed it now, that the electoral officer must be a legally trained senior person. It means he must be an advocate or a retired judge, and that is in fact what we have. We had retired judges and judges and advocates overseeing the election, in the last election. And yes, they have their rate. You go to an advocate and a senior advocate. And sometimes, because of football and the many legal challenges, you know, we had about 5 court cases leading up to that election. And sometimes it is better to have legally trained people to deal with the legal issues and so on. And what we have said to our legal department and legal committee is, you must simplify the election. Our election was probably the most complicated, but we can send you the electoral code that we had and the electoral code that we have now. Because if you have a complicated electoral process, like our ballot papers had special designs. You know, when you make tickets for FIFA World Cup, you have a lot of security features there. We'll show you this. And we said, but we cannot spend such a lot of money to get people elected. We have to simplify it. And we did. So I don't think we will have $6 million again, but we will be close to it, because most of the costs is actually to convene the meeting and bring people and elect, how many, 28 people, and not just one person. We don't have presidential election. We have executive committee elections. So that was just a false report. And we did have a meeting with Tiso Black Star, because about three articles that they wrote were just blatant lies. And we had a meeting with them, and you'll see in the Sunday Times they've now stopped it. Because we said we'll have to take the next step, but first engage you. We secondly had a meeting with SANEF, and the third step was to go to court. And those things have now stopped. Unfortunately, it's in football where you get all of these stories which you read, which has no truth in it. The sports betting, it's okay. Women's salary is, let me deal with it. Currently, as the chair indicated, the only sponsor that we have for women's football is Sasol. And the sponsorship for Banyana is 20 million. And there, a lot of the costs must be travel, accommodation, and so on. So yes, they are not getting the same as Bafana. But on the Bafana side, you have many sponsors. And this is something that we said. It starts in the boardrooms of people who take decisions to allocate sponsorship. And it will probably be mostly dominated to male teams than to women teams. And it's not just Banyana. You go to cricket and see what the women cricketers get in relation to the men cricketers. You go to rugby, see what men get versus women rugby players. And you can go through. So it's a problem that as far as we talk, but this is a matter that I think maybe the committee should talk to the big sponsors of football, or to call them in, to call the banks. Government is a big supporter of many of these banks. It is your money that's there, and ask them what is going on. So I'm saying that there is that this big gap between salaries of Bafana Banyana, and we are committed to address that issue. But we have to raise the revenue first in order to pay. The good thing is that we have a high number of women players playing in Europe now.
Excuse me, President.
Yeah.
Anyone who's going to respond
must be short.
We're beyond the time, okay. But we need that. You must answer all the questions.
Okay. Let me stop then, sir, and give to somebody else. But you must be brief.
Brief to the point.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. In regard to the Indaba, I think we all know that the Minister has announced in Parliament in July that there is an intention from the Department of Sports and Arts and Culture to do the Indaba, to have an Indaba of football. And during that time when we had that statement, our president engaged with the minister to find out exactly what the Indaba is going to be all about, so that we can be able to be a participant in that Indaba. And indeed, we requested a meeting with the minister on the 23rd. We had a meeting with the minister where we took him through the same proposal, the same presentation that the president took you, just to show where we are in terms of football and what are the challenges that we have. And the minister indicated that he has only 1 hour to speak to us. He's rushing to Japan. And indeed, there will be a follow-up meeting where we'll sit down as football and discuss the issue of the Indaba. Then after the meeting, there was a letter that was sent from SAFA to indicate to the minister the discussion that we have agreed that we will have a meeting urgently as soon as he comes back so that we can map up the issue of the Indaba. Then there was a response from the minister that did not go very well with members of the executive. The letter was saying no, the meeting with SAFA will only happen after the Indaba. And it was a very serious concern for us because we are operating under, I think VP Mugwena has indicated that we have strong rules and regulations from FIFA. And there are a number of countries that have already been suspended just because government wanted to for example, to establish a commission of inquiry into football in those countries. Nigeria is one of them. They were actually given 24 hours to withdraw what they want to do as government. Otherwise, Nigeria is going. Kenya is one of the many countries now under administration because of that. But we wanted to sit down with the minister, map up this. We think the Indaba is an important platform for us to be able to raise the issue of funding, to raise the issue of players that are not released from the professional league when the players are needed for national duty. But we felt that there are rules and regulations that we are controlled by in terms of FIFA. For example, there is a Article 13 that is very clear that says there will be no interference. The obligation of a federation to manage their affairs independently and ensure that their own affairs are not influenced by the third party. And that is key. And I think in our deliberation, the president wanted to meet with the minister and go through this so that we don't find ourselves being suspended because FIFA feels a third party. And it goes further to say even if SAFA did not participate in that, but the third party has done something in football, FIFA has the right to suspend the federation. So for us, it was on those bases that we wanted to sit with the minister and map up so that when this Indaba comes up, it must not be coming out as if it is a government Indaba. It must be because we are the custodian of football. Let me give a chair. Allow me to give an example. For example, the committee that has been formed there now decide on the delegation. SAFA is given 64 members to attend. SAFA has got 367 LF local football association. We have got 52 regions. We have got 9 provinces. We have got 9 associate members. We have got one special member, which is PSL. Now, PSL now is given 64 delegates. Where do they get the 64 delegates? And PSL is a member of SAFA. So the minister, we believe that we should be sitting with the department. We run football in the country. We should be given an opportunity to come and say, in terms of football, this is the members that will come to, because they are members. I want to give, and members were giving an example, for example, and say, in the ANC, for example, they are run by branches. You cannot bring people from outside and say, we want to do an Indaba of ANC, but they are not members. So it's practical. We would want assistance from this committee because we feel like we are going to divide the country with this Indaba if it is not organized by the custodian of football, which is, and we want the support of the minister. We want to, and minister can invite
the people that are like the committee of sport, portfolio committee, government people, people that will bring value into. But the football should be decided by us. We should decide. They are saying they are calling an expert, an international expert, to come and talk. Who in the football industry would know international expert like our, more than our president? I think I can confidently say in the world, I think there are not more than five CEOs that have run successful World Cup, and the president is one of them. And he has traveled the world. He has gone to countries. He knows people that can come and address us in terms of football. But if his opinion is not even considered, that come and sit with me as the president of the organization, let me get, this is what we want to do, what is your opinion? We feel that like we are going to find ourselves not in compliance of the FIFA statutes. And I just mentioned one. There's Article 13, there's Article 15, and Article 19 that are very clear, and FIFA do not compromise when it comes to the running of the affairs of football in any federation that is a member. So we hear honestly, and we are happy that you have asked that question so that you can assist us. We want the Indaba, but can this Indaba be in consultation, proper consultation? And very interestingly is that even in the letter that was sent to SAFA, there is the sports recreation and sports recreation plan. That is the first paragraph that the minister in the letter says in terms of this plan. But in that plan, if you look at the plan is very clear. It says it will be in partnership with the stakeholder, and it will also in support of the stakeholder, because we run football, rugby, run football, rugby, cricket, so athletics, so football. This is the body that is running football. That is why the vice president was trying to show you that even the public, sometimes they forget that even the professional league, it's a member of SAFA. When something happens at the professional league, you should be sanctioning us. Not the PSL. You should be calling us and say there is something that we don't see. People are dying in a stadium. You tell us, what are you doing about it? Because it's our member. You can't call our member without us, because we have the constitution that we are all in compliance in terms of that. And we are here honestly to say the Indaba is very important for football. There are a lot of challenges in football, but this endeavor has to be coordinated with football so that it is not seen as something that is false, because there might be decisions that are made in that endeavor, and there must be decisions that will bind us also, and we know that it is in terms with the compliance of FIFA. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dabe. I wanted that there's a question asked by Honorable Van Dijk on the Africa Games in Morocco. I would love that it must be the last question. Other questions, you raised so many questions, Honorable Boy. Yes, they will write and respond to you. I wanted that the question that I'm suspecting that we are hearing it for the second time, if you can give us an answer on that.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, on the African continent, there are 54 countries playing football. For the All Africa Games, only 8 qualify. So you play preliminary qualification, then you play the final, then you go to AFCON, and the top eight then goes to All Africa Games. Now, we started last year already, the qualification. And this is organized under CAF, not under SASCOC. So in terms of the CAF qualification rules, we then have qualified. And then CAF drew up the fixture. We went there to the draw. We were part of the draw, and we are now in the fixture, in the All Africa Games. And the fixtures are out, and we had the fixtures. Of course, we had the teams in camp. They were training. They were ready to go. Then we get from SASCOC, no, you cannot go. Why? No, because we don't have money. We said, but in any case, in the qualifications we played over the whole year, you have not given us a single penny. Our Olympic under 23 team, we've paid all the costs. We have never received a penny from SASCOC ever. We pay. So we said, no, we will pay, let the team go. If that's the issue, let the team go, we'll pay. No, and a lot of issues. Now, if you qualify for a competition in CAF and you don't play your draw, they suspend you. And for the next three tournaments, you cannot play. And we say, but you cannot tell us now that you can't go. So we spoke to the minister because, remember, SASCOC is constituted in terms of the Act. The government has statutory powers there. So we spoke to the minister, say, Mr. Minister, this is the problem. And in any case, the minister was not in the country. We spoke to the acting minister, Didiza. And she said she was going to resolve it and speak to SASCOC and so on. The end result is SASCOC then said, we got a letter from SASCOC to say, okay, the team can participate. Then we were fined for late submission of our team there, and we had to pay. SAFA paid the fines so that the team could play. So that is, in short, what I know. Of course, I would not know what happened between SASCOC and the minister because we were not party to those meetings. I cannot talk about those things.
Thank you, President. I wanted that the honorable members must hear from you, of course, who were reported about this incident. But there's nothing wrong that the member, if they wanted to hear from you. It was an issue in the committee. We did ask that the department must come and report to us. They've reported to us this incident. Let me take this opportunity saying that, especially with the question of Indaba, as a chairperson of this committee, I'm suspecting I'm given now the mandate to go back to the minister. I saw this thing this morning, and surely every member of parliament does have an interest in each and every paparazzi issues. And they were always giving the rightful things. Sometimes, as the UPROF was saying in some answers, misleading. But thanks that this article or this information, you sent it in the papers whilst we are going to meet with you. So, as we are sitting here, the minister officially and the president, they are in Japan. Unfortunately, that the chairperson of this committee is here. No. And now, no, I'm talking about finance. But fortunately, this is the work. Again, I'm not sleeping, sitting at home. I'm happy that I'm here and chairing this meeting, very important meeting. We'll liaise with the minister, the officials of minister and deputy minister, they are at your back as you are going to communicate this afternoon. I'll ask them also to do that. So I'm not going to say anything to you except that thank you for the information. We'll do a follow-up because it was this committee saying that we want this in Daba because of those reasons that we discussed. Let me take this opportunity to thank you again and more thankful to our first presenter, the commissioner, that they've respected us when we're saying photo shooting maybe can be nothing, but the issues are related, and the respect that you have given us as a committee, I'm suspecting you also need the respect from us. We'll try to drive that. We're always giving you a respect when we're calling you in the meeting, because we are leaders out there, whilst we are leaders of parliament. But we can be robust, but we must respect your good self. Honorable members, Friday is Friday. Thank you to come to the meeting, and any other problems that occurred will sort as this committee. If we are a human being, thank you very much. Let's have a photo shoot. Those who are aware how to do the things outside, we have our paparazzi here must be with us. He did come. The communication, somebody, you must join us outside. Thank you. The meeting adjourned.